I'm going to go to Rob Nahigian. This is my friend calling in from Boston. Hello there, young man.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Oh, it's so nice to hear from you. You really, really gave us quite a show on your logistics seminar in New York City last week. Man.
Well, thank you very much. This is a program that I've put together probably over the last 4 or 5 years because it's based on what I do as a living, but it's also, you know, sort of the newest trend of what's going on, and part of it was because of what's happening with the Panama Canal. So it's a four-hour program, and, you know, you try to squeeze some takeaway value in an hour and 15 minutes, so.
Well, just think, today you're going to squeeze it into 20 minutes.
Well, that's easy enough to do.
And it was Shanghai to Greater Waterbury in Connecticut?
No, we could call it that. It's actually from Shanghai to your shelf, but, you know, your shelf could be anywhere. So it could be Waterbury, it could be, you know, it could be Chicago, it could be, you know, Portland, Maine, I mean, wherever you want it to be.
Well, then on that note, because you're real life, you're a principal at Auburndale Realty Company, and you have a lot of designations. The one I'm so familiar with, because you've trained us so many times over the years, SIOR. What's an SIOR?
So the Society of Industrial and Office Realtors, which is what it stands for, it's a professional designation, like what you have, Tom. You're an SIOR, you're a CCIM. So most professions have some type of certification or professional designation. And, you know, if you're an accountant, you're a CPA. If you're an architect, you might be a member of AIA. And so in real estate, the designation is for the top office or industrial brokers, real estate brokers in the country. So that's basically what it is.
So, right, so
it's not, you can't buy it. You don't join like a membership. You have to earn it. You have to earn it by volume and by passing the courses and the exam, and hopefully you become certified.
And I think you have to show a lot of transactions and cancel checks as well, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, interestingly, Tom, I mean, I've been a member since 1986, and the rules are different now than they were then about how to get in. But, you know, back in 86, which was interesting because that meant I was taking the courses in the early 80s, and then I was listening to guys that were in that were talking about the 1970s. But back then, you needed, I believe, 7 years of experience and back then it was just the Society of Industrial Realtors. So you needed 7 years of experience doing industrial brokerage, but two of those years could be substituted if you had a master's degree in related real estate curriculum, which I had at the time, and you took the courses, that counted for another full year. So that meant basically you get down to 5 years. And then the volume at the time was determined by the chapter, and the volume was how many square feet you did per year, how many transactions you did per year, and I think it was square and the dollar amount. So the dollar amount not meaning your commission, but the dollar amount of the deal. So and if you, you know, if you co-broke, not meaning there's not a broker involved, then you only get half credit. And there's four brokers involved, you only get 25% credit.
But a lot of times you have to deal with another really good broker to get your transaction done. We're talking to Rob Nahigian. He's an SIOR, but he also has CRE, FRICS, and MCR. 10 seconds on each.
Okay, so Counselors in Real Estate is CRE. That's for the top real estate advisors in the country. FRICS is the Fellow of the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors. That is an international real estate designation. And MCR is Master in Corporate Real Estate, which is given through Cornet Global. Cornet Global is the organization of the Fortune 5000 real estate directors, and it's pretty much an end-user designation.
So you'd be doing deals with IBM, Xerox, and those kind of people if you're an MCR?
Yeah, but not necessarily. I mean, a lot of my clients are privately held companies in the Boston area, so they're regional, but I see the value even if you're a landlord, because if you're a landlord broker working with the tenant, you get a much better idea of how does that tenant make a real estate decision, because the curriculum is really geared from the tenant standpoint. and you learn a lot more about how that tenant looks at budgets and hierarchy and how they make decision making. It's just completely different than anything that we're historically taught as real estate brokers.
And in our course at SIOR in the Bank of America last week in Manhattan, you were talking about tenants who took warehouses and we represent them, and it was Shanghai to your shelf, and we'll do it Shanghai to Connecticut today as well. But you also, in the seminar, were talking about trains, planes, boats, and trucks. Take it away.
Okay, so the reason, first of all, that I even call it from Shanghai to your shelf is because of the fact that many products are made offshore, and offshore in this case means China. So why didn't I just call it from China to your shelf? Well, because it eventually has to get shipped to the United States, so that means it's got to go to a port, and that port would be Shanghai. Shanghai is the largest port in the world. More traffic comes out of there than anywhere else, and that traffic is quantified by what's called well, we call them containers, right? But the fancy term is TEU, which is 20 equivalent units. So now the question is like, well, how does it end up on your shelf, whether it's Target or Walmart? I mean, yeah, it could be Waterbury. It could be anywhere you want it to be. But the real question that I was posing was, how does that real estate company that's shipping from China to the United States, how do they make the decision of where those distribution centers are going to be in the United States? So with that question comes another question, which is, what's the transportation mode that you're going to use? So you can't assume it's ship, because there's four basic transportation modes. It's actually five, but I only mentioned four. The four would be shipping, rail, air, and truck, right? So the fifth one, if I'm on the West Coast, they beat me up and tell me, oh, what about the pipeline? And I remember the first time I did this program 5 years ago, I didn't know what the hell the pipeline, what are they talking about, the pipeline? Well, it turns out the pipeline is the oil pipeline, the Keystone pipeline that was coming from Canada to go to Houston that didn't exactly happen because it stopped because the government didn't want to pursue the development of it because there were environmentalists that didn't think it was really a good thing. But the Keystone pipeline was considered a mode of transportation. So these four modes of transportations, that's what they are. So if you just use one mode, it's just called a mode of transportation, right? I ship from Shanghai to Los Angeles, and that's it. But that's not the reality. The reality is you got to unload it, and you got to put it on something else it's going to deliver. So it's either going to be rail, it could be air, or it could be a truck. It doesn't matter which one it is. If you're using more than one mode of transportation, then the term is intermodal, right? Inter means between modes. So could you use three modes? Yeah, you could use four modes. It doesn't matter. Once you use more than one, it's intermodal. Well, the problem with intermodal, it costs you more money. You start unloading. You got to pay someone to unload. You got to pay someone to load. You got to pay the railroad company, the trucking company. And then you got another problem, which is, well, what happens if I buy in big bulk? Well, I guess you can't put it on a truck, because when we're buying in bulk, we're not buying like a container. We're buying, you know, I think I showed you guys, like Walmart does 800,000 containers a year. Now, that's number one.
So if you drive by the New Jersey Turnpike and see those things stacked up, this is what you're talking about, Rob Nahigi and SIOR, correct?
That's correct. So you see those containers, but you don't know, like, do they all belong to one client? Some of them could be Walgreens, some could be Walmart, some could be, you know, they could be some regional company, right? So when these ships come to port, I was in Savannah 2 weeks ago, and I asked the question, when the ship comes to Savannah, I'm at the port, how many of those containers are actually coming off the ship? Now, the ship is holding, every ship has a different capacity. But let's just say it's 10,000 containers. Well, they're not all getting off at one port. They might only be unloading 2,000 or 3,000 containers. And it may not even be one customer. It might be a multiple of customers. So I just think about that and just say, wow, that's got to be expensive. Then where's the ship going after that? So in this case, the guy said, this shipment was just coming in from Italy, and it was going to, I think he told me it was going to Norfolk and then going to New Jersey. So it was making multiple stops for multiple clients. And ultimately, if I really wanted to dig into it, I would have asked, well, who's unloading and where is it going on a train and where's that train going if I really wanted to follow the route. But interestingly, Tom, as I think about this, because of high tech, those containers have GPSs on them now. They didn't have them like 30 years ago. So you let's just say you buy a laptop, and that laptop is going to be made in Korea, and you want to know, like, how long is it going to take to get to my shelf, like your front door, for instance. You can, in some companies, actually track it online, and you can see the container that's holding your laptop and watch it being transported from Korea to, like, Seattle, and then getting on a rail and ending up, like, you know, in Chicago, and then coming to Connecticut, and then you're like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Man, that's an awful lot of mileage. All right, let's see if you can hold your breath for 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Rob Nahigian, right back.
The 5th Annual Food Drive at Oliver's Supermarket on Route 69 in Prospect is underway. This year's drive is being held to benefit the Prospect and Naugatuck food banks at a critical time. Please help fill the truck by donating non-perishable goods now through Friday, November 16th. Sponsored through the generosity of Oliver's Supermarket, Ion Bank, the local chapter of the Knights of Columbus, and St. Anthony's Church. Donations can be dropped off during regular business hours at Oliver's Supermarket, 75 Waterbury Road in Prospect. Thank you.
And if you hit Oliver's Supermarket at the right time, you just might bump into Barbara Davitt wandering the aisles.
This car I'm driving, I overpaid big time. It was such a mistake. I should have just gone to Carfax.com, but I went to some other site. They gave me a price range? Oh, they were way off. Son of a...
Carfax has a better way. When you search used cars at Carfax.com, you get the most accurate price based on the Carfax report, so you never have to overpay on a used car again. Start your used car search today at Carfax.com.
I'm going to tell you a story about how the drug war in Mexico began.
And who is boss?
Only on Netflix.
Miguel Felix Gallardo.
Drug kingpin of Guadalajara.
We take out Felix, we cripple the Mexican drug trade.
Witness the birth of Mexico's drug war.
Got to take down the ones calling the shots.
It's time to take the gloves off.
Gallardo crosses the DEA for the last time tonight.
Narcos Mexico, now streaming on Netflix.
Weekday afternoon talk following Talk of the Town begins with Todd Starnes at 1, followed by the Tom Shalhoub Show.
I would think that it would create more. For some reason,
healthier,
I feel like free range.
It walks around.
Would have more succulent dark meat. Is that
really?
Well, because when I eat a natural bird,
It's
always the dark meat. I feel like the wild birds have dark meat. What do you guys say to that? Josh, wild birds, more dark meat?
I don't care. Dead's dead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, though.
And Benson and Harp, weekdays at 6 p.m.
It's time for a talk show with smart perspective from both sides of the aisle. Benson and Harp.
Yes, sometimes movies were made and books were written in different eras.
Yeah.
We can be adults and explain that some of these cultural mores have advanced and progressed and changed for good reason.
I still watch Pretty Woman.
You've mentioned that movie
several
times.
No, but it's so fascinating when you watch and you're like, wait, the moral of the story is I'm a hooker and then he pays me.
Can we clip that right there?
Followed by Fox Sports Talk all night long on WATR 1320 and WATR.com.
Tom Hill! 1320 WATR Hill's Gallery.
By way of Talk of the Town, I'm in for Steve Noxon. He's away to see his mom. He'll be back Monday. I'm on the phone with Rob Nahigian, S-I-O-R, and we're talking about logistics worldwide. We were talking about the ports going... I guess you were at Savannah heading somewhere from there, Rob.
I have probably visited about 15 ports around the country. That was the last one I had not visited that was of relevancy to me. And so that was about 2 weeks ago. And I was down in that area working. So I was able to get a tour and, you know.
No, wait a minute. In the seminar, you told us you tried to sneak in.
No, I try to sneak into Norfolk. There are other ports. I did. The first time I was doing this, I wanted to get pictures so I could put them in the presentation. And so when I was at Norfolk, I kind of got in line with these trucks, and I had this little compact rental car, you know, so you can't really see the car. And we're getting to the guardhouse. Now, you got to kind of envision these tractor trailers as like you know, there's like five in front of me, five behind me, and I'm stuck in the middle, and you don't see me until the truck in front of me, like, is at the guardhouse, and he goes through, and then all of a sudden, there's this guy in this little compact car, and the guard says to me, "What the hell do you think you're doing? What do you think you're going to be doing?" I said, "Well, I teach this course on logistics supply chain, and I want to come in and take some pictures." He goes, "You want to do what?" I said, "I just want to take some pictures so I can add it to my presentation." He goes, "You know this is the Navy base happens to be right next to it." He goes, "You understand this is the Port Authority?" I go, "Yeah, I understand." "And do you have permission?" I'm like, "No, I'm just trying to take some pictures." He started mentioning this TWIC. TWIC card is a transportation worker's identification card. I didn't know that's what it was at the time. I just heard TWIC. I go, "I don't have anything." He goes, "So," he says, "let me explain how this works." He goes, you got two choices. You're either going to take your little," he said, "your little rental car, and you're going to turn around right here, and you're going to leave the way you came in. I'm going to pretend you weren't here." He said, "That's option one. Option two is you stay here, and I call Homeland Security, and we arrest you. So which option do you want?" So I said, "Well, I think I'm taking option one."
So I
turned around, and I left. And I mentioned this in the class the next day. And there was a gal in the class. It was an SIOR chapter event in Virginia. So I mentioned this story, and I said, "Yeah, I try to take pictures. They try to arrest me. Like, yeah, I guess you can't go in." So this lady in the class was with Economic Development for Norfolk, and she actually gives the tours, and she said, "Yeah, you can't do that, but give me a call. Let's talk after class, and I'll if you're coming back, I'll set you up." So I was coming back a month later, and she gave me a one-person tour, and it was fabulous. But that's when I learned a lesson, like, you can't just show up.
Well, it's good news that they're secure, especially with the terrorism situations.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. I mean, you know, as I said, I've done this at many different ports, and so the requirements to do the tours have been different. Sometimes they ask me, Baltimore, they wanted a month in advance, they wanted my license, they wanted, like, to do a security check. But Savannah said to me, they're not really that picky about, you know, their reason for really filtering. Now, this is kind of weird. The guy says to me, "You know, we don't really give private tours." This is when I called up. I said, "I know, I'm calling in. I'm just making a cold call. I should have called a month in advance." He goes, "We kind of do it in groups." But I told him what I was doing. He said, "Send me copies of flyers of the programs you ran. We want to, validate your reel." So when I went there, he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "We give tours." He goes, "The problem is we get people on vacation in Savannah." They're in, like, look at the port, and they go, "Oh, hey, let's spend a couple hours and do a tour of the port."
Oh, my God.
I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, we get these." He goes, "We'd get calls all day long if we didn't filter it out. People that just want to do tours, and we don't have time for that."
All right, I'm going to stop.
I just find it amusing.
I'm going to stop you again here now.
Go ahead.
You did with all these ports, including West Coast and all over the world, but especially on the East Coast, the competition between ports is unbelievable. Talk about the size of the ships and the bridges and the way in from the ocean.
So, yeah, interestingly, so when the Panama Canal was built back in 1913, ships were obviously very small. Now we speed up to, like, the 1980s. Cargo ships, for the most part, would hold 5,000 to 7,000 containers. But what happened on the ground is that a company, I'm not going to say this was the only one, but a company called, I think it was American Standardized Container, something like that. They came up with this concept of a rail where you put two containers on a rail, like on top of each other, right? So you're stacking. Well, if you stack, that created another problem, which it meant you need to have rail tunnels that could carry, you know, a double stack height. Well, once that happened, then the next question became, how do we bring things in bulk to take advantage of double stacking? Because you don't pay as much when you double stack. You're not going linear. You're going, you know, vertical. So ships started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So big that about 5, 6, 7 years ago, the biggest one in the world would hold, I believe, about 19,000 containers. But then a year later, that was outdone by another ship that was making 20,000, another one that was making 22,000. So you're like, oh, that's good. Yeah, but they're big. Well, how big is big? Well, so big that if I was to tip the ship, you know, upside, not upside, up from, you know, top to bottom, stern to port, it's 1,400 feet. It's the same height as the Empire State Building. So if you can imagine trying to take the Empire State Building and turning around in a harbor, and it's heavy, and now all of a sudden you need more depth, and oh yeah, the pilot house might not clear the bridges because everything was built over 100 years ago, and they weren't built for clearance for these ships. So ultimately what happened is that the Panama Canal is losing business because their canals cannot carry these size ships. They're not wide enough. And so they decided to put a third canal in. And when that happened, then the East Coast realized they were going to get more business, and they had to spend billions of dollars dredging the harbors and start raising the bridges.
Now, all you shoppers out there, the reason I had Rob on, and he had a slideshow, and I said to myself, does the average shopper who loves to shop on Black Friday and all these places or on the internet realize the logistics that's what's going on out here to get your products from out of the country, in the country, to your shelf? It just, and if people want to, if an economic development group or a chamber wants to hire you and pay you for your show, how do they get a hold of you?
They can, you know, they can call me at work, 617-332-6900. That certainly, you could just email me, rob@siorcre.com.
And what else would you...
I have done this for economic development organizations, not just real estate groups, so...
Do you use web or Twitter?
No, I don't. I don't use Twitter. I don't use Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn.
So they could find you. Spell your last name.
Just call me up. I return calls.
All right, give you the number again.
617-332-6900.
Now, I know we've gone about, you know, talking about trains, pipelines, the ships, and I know it's a much longer presentation, but what else is on your mind that you think you should tell the WATR audience while I'm lucky enough to have you on the phone line?
Well, you know, ultimately this is about the fact that everybody wants cheaper cost, right? So how does a company like Target or Walmart, let's put Amazon to the side, but how does Target and Walmart, how are they able to get you the pricing that cheap, right? And some of you might say, well, it's not cheap enough. And if it's not cheap enough, then they got to keep dropping their prices. So here's the problem all these brick-and-mortar companies have, and I mean companies that have actual stores. Transportation is almost 60% of their overhead. That is ultimately the problem. So it's a huge chunk. It's not that the cost of real estate is so high. It's the cost of transportation. Now you take Amazon. Well, where are their stores? I don't see 500 stores around the country. So they flip-flopped it, and they said, okay, we came into the industry when there's internet and e-commerce, and all of a sudden they can beat the pants out of everybody because all they're doing is shipping in from Shanghai, putting in a distribution facility. You go online, you push a button, and really, these buildings are automated. I mean, they don't even have very many people. I know some buildings that are completely automated, zero people in the building. You push a button, it goes to Visa, it's being, or wherever, it's being facilitated, it's going to a warehouse. This is the order online. It's going to a warehouse, which is signaling to a little machine that goes underneath the shelf, picks it up, brings it to the dock, and then all of a sudden it's going on to, it's either UPS or FedEx, and it's ending up in your front door. One of the things that's interesting, though, Tom, is Amazon wants to get that delivery, which we call click and pick, click to pick it up at your front door. They want to get that delivery time down to 2 hours.
Unbelievable.
And that's where the drones start coming in, because the question is, how the hell do you think you're going to do that? First, you don't have a distribution center in a downtown market. You don't have enough land area. So how are you going to get an order that's like 30 miles outside of town and end up in your front door in 2 hours? And that'll happen one of two ways, either drones, which is, you know, still precarious right now. And the second way is to have a downtown location that's much smaller. And now they're doing delivery by vans or bicycles, even, I'm seeing.
And that would be called the last mile in today's world of warehouse
and
industrial?
Exactly, the last mile. That's exactly correct. And that location, that last mile location, very expensive. The rent is high. The congestion is high. Taxes are high. You know, New York City's got a congestion fee. If you go in the city on certain hours, it's an extra tax. So, you know, and consumers don't want to pay, right? So someone's got to eat it. Think about free returns. How the heck do you do free returns?
No, it's
someone's got to pay for something.
It's a good point. Now, I know Rhode Island's charging the trucks a toll on 95. Is Massachusetts taxing the trucks?
I don't know. You know, some of those taxes happen in a different way that sometimes it's not so obvious. Like, you know how you've been hearing, like, some states want to have a toll that you pay more if you're going into the city during certain hours of the day,
yep.
And that's come up again. Some people, like last week, I was in Chicago driving up to Madison. If you have a transponder, it's cheaper. If you don't, you pay almost like 100% more. So, you know, there are different taxes that come about that are not actually a tax rate.
Man, I'm going to go personally on you now, as I've known
sure.
you a real long time, and I'm delighted we're speaking to Rob Nahigian, CRE from Boston. A number of years ago, I used to drive the late, great Wayne D'Amico, president of CCIM, all to a lot of these conferences, and we met you one night up at Turning Stone Casino, 2 hours west of Albany. You were teaching. Wayne was doing his CCIM thing, and both of you were road warriors. We got into the bar, and you guys had the greatest discussion about CCIM versus SIOR and all the travels you made. What made you become a road warrior trainer all over the world, and how do you make time to do your great real estate business? Because I read about you in the New England Real Estate Journal for some pretty whopper-sized transactions.
So, you know, it's a good question. First of all, I don't look at education as a hobby. So that's the first thing. If you don't look at it as a hobby, then it doesn't become a problem. And what I mean by that is if your job is doing real estate deals and all of a sudden someone calls you and says, hey, can you come do a speech? You're like, well, let me see if I can find time. That's not me. This is part of what I do. I do brokerage, I do advisory, and I do education. So most of my business, when I do programs, it's one day in and one day out. I mean, I look at anyone that hires me to speak, they're a client too. They're no different than anybody else. So people say, well, how do you do your business? Most of my business is not going to buildings, showing a building every day. It's behind the desk. It's on the phone. It's you know, with technology, it's just not that much of a problem. I mean, even when I was in New York, I was still doing business on the phone. And one of the nice things, Tom, is at least if I'm on, first of all, I'm not on the road like 5 days a week. Now, I've been on the road the last 9 weeks, but it's been one day in, one day out. And I'm already scheduled months in advance, so it's not like my clients don't know. I got a cell phone. You got a problem? It says, call me on my cell. I pick it up. You know, I might be in a cab or something or my hotel room, but I bring my work material. They say, hey, can I see you? Yeah, I'll be back tomorrow. Well, let's make appointment for the following morning. So that's you just have to be able to. I think time management is what becomes very important, and that means you've got to be very organized.
Well, you know, I'm enjoying this visit. What do you have for times? I have to play a couple more commercials. Can you grant?
I have lots of time.
All right, good.
No, I blocked off a couple
right.
hours, so
all
you
right.
can decide what you want to use and not use, but I'm not in a rush.
All right, so check your email. I'll be right back with more. Rob Nahigian, WATR, Tom Hill in for Steve Noxon. This is Talk of the Town. Right back.
You know, with any company, commitment to client service is important, no matter what product you provide. It's never more important than when you're looking for in-home care for someone you love. Companions and Homemakers has been providing live-in and hourly care for the elderly for over 28 years. And with 11 offices throughout the state, we're able to provide caregivers in every city and town. All of our caregivers go through extensive background checks. They're compassionate and caring, and they're committed to providing the best care possible. Our care coordinators work hard to provide just the right match so that our caregivers and clients can enjoy their time together. For a full list of services that we provide and to learn more about Companions and Homemakers, visit us online at companionsandhomemakers.com. With Companions and Homemakers, home is possible. We can show you how.
Here's a special message for those of you who owe the IRS at least $10,000 or more in back taxes. The IRS has special programs in place that could eliminate or reduce your tax debt by thousands of dollars. Call the Federal Tax Management Helpline that has been set up for you, 800-233-8540. Stop the wage garnishments, levies, and tax liens now. Once you've qualified and enrolled, the IRS will stop all the collection activities against you. These unique programs have been allocated to help the economy and significantly reduce or eliminate your tax burden. The IRS is currently accepting reduced settlements and other favorable programs. You may qualify for substantial savings, so get the help you need. If you owe more than $10,000 in taxes, call for free information and to see if you qualify. Take down the number now for the Federal Tax Management Hotline, 800-233-8540. That's 800-233-8540. 800-233-8540.
Hills Gallery, actually talking to the town. I'm thinking I'm on Saturday, but I'm really on a Friday here. We're talking to Rob Nahigi. And Rob, have you looked into any of these new opportunity zones that are popping up around the country?
Only on paper. There's opportunity zones, and then they have these things called certified sites that economic development and municipal and towns or municipalities have put together. So, you know, I looked at it a little bit. I mean, I used to be a city planner way, way back, and we had foreign trade zones. So these opportunity zones are sort of a play off of foreign trade zones. Basically, how do we bring business to an area that needs to have more business? So we're talking about maybe depressed areas or areas that just don't have a lot of employment. So
yeah, our Waterbury Regional Chamber and our Waterbury Development Corp had a seminar on this, and what the tax people were saying is that there's billions and billions of dollars worth of unrecognized capital gains with people that have money in the stock market. And it kind of reminded me of people doing 1031 tax deferred exchanges and taking their money, putting it into a new investment, and postponing the tax and or with the opportunity zone, getting stepped up basis and a lot more return on your money over time if you held this stuff till 2026. Your comments?
It's a way of being innovative. Look, at least what I see it, I'm not sure if it'll work or not work. I'm not really thinking of it from that standpoint. I'm thinking about the fact that I find it intriguing that, you know, government wants to partner up. That's how I look at it. I think it's proactive. I like it that they're trying to be proactive. And the question will become, you know, where are those zones going to be?
And they, our seminar, they brought out all kinds of maps, and they did a beautiful job showing where the maps were. And the last lawyer, Attorney Gary O'Connor, who's a past president of our chamber, he wrapped up with something like you would do. Here's where the deal is and how this is how it works, just like you did with the logistics to the brokers in the audience on, you know, how to place warehouse and how to look at the understand what your Targets and Walmarts and others are you doing logistically to get the product to your shelf.
Okay. I mean, you know, it's the one thing that I find when I talk to economic developers and they want to do, you know, anything, opportunities, it's all about bringing in business, right? That's kind of what it is at the end of the day. There's two things I always have to kind of think in mind. One is, especially when it comes to tax incentives, how important is a tax incentive factor to the final decision-making of a company? I don't care what the newspapers say. I know what I just heard of from about Amazon. But when I talk to clients and I interview them, part of it is I want to understand what drives them. Obviously, it's part of what I need to know as a professional, but I also want to know it for class. And what I find is tax incentives aren't a big part of what's driving their decision-making. If it is, I start wondering, like, is a company going to stay in business? I mean, if tax incentives are that important to you, you know, I'm not saying taxes don't eat away at profit. It does. But there's, you know, there's 10 other factors I could come up with. I just sometimes wonder, how much does it really make a difference on tax incentives? If you really want to be somewhere and you can save money, I look at tax incentives as a bonus. That's number one. Number two, these zones end up being in areas that people don't necessarily want to be in.
Mm.
So think about that.
Yes.
That's why they're there, because nobody wants to be there. So I got to encourage you to come somewhere you don't want to be. All right? So, you know, you've got a little bit of a, you're going up upstream. I was in Shreveport doing a program for the economic, it's called LIDEA, which is Louisiana Industrial Development Executive Association. So they wanted me to do this program on logistics supply chain. And the question was, how do we get Amazon to come to Shreveport to put like a national distribution center, like 1 million square feet. I said to them, why would Amazon want to come to Shreveport? I'm sorry. I mean, I think it's a great city and everything, but, you know, do you understand that if I pick up a magazine, like there's a magazine called Site Selection Magazine.
Correct.
There must be 30 ads from 30 different parts of the country that say, you should be here. Really? So Every 30 places around the country is the place to be. It doesn't work that way. You got to pick and choose what's going to work in your market, right? So I said, forget Amazon. They're not coming to Shreveport. They weren't happy with me, but I'm like, hey, it's reality. So you got to pick and choose what's going to work in an opportunity zone rather than being broad-based and say, I'm not saying anyone's saying this, but certainly you're not getting the whole world.
Right, right. The market has to drive it. All right, so you were a city planner in a early life. Basic definition for the audience of what city planners do.
Oh, I wish I knew. So, look, I got a master's degree from Columbia University. And when I had to get my urban planning degree, it broke down into different disciplines. So there can be many different disciplines that a city planner does. But typically, a planner that works like in – you could work in the public sector or you could work in the private sector, like for an architectural firm. So they might be doing anything from zoning review to setting up zoning bylaws to here's 1,000 acres, plan it, tell me where residents should be, industrial, commercial. There's infrastructure planning. There's what's called social planning. So because of those different disciplines, a city planner could be doing different things. In my case, I was doing two things. I was doing economic development, and I worked in Bowie, Maryland, and what the city wanted to know is how do we grow as a city? So I put an economic development plan together that surveyed businesses and then looked at how do we encourage certain development. Should we be encouraging more retail development or should we be covering more industrial? And then once you get into, like, let's encourage, now the next question is how do we do that? So what are you going to policies going to be?
So that's
what a city plan. And then I did the normal stuff, which is, you know, some guy's got a house he wants to build. He comes in front of the planning board. And typically what happens is before that, the city planner reviews the plans, makes sure it's compliant with zoning, comes up with recommendations for frontage or the looks of the property, and makes a recommendation to the planning board, and they make final decisions.
I'm speaking to Rob Nahigian, CRE, and the Shell Answer Man. Nice job. All right, hold on again. Here's the weather.
As we go through the rest of the afternoon, windy, some melting upper 30s to about 40 degrees. Now, this evening, that temperature is going to drop, so any puddles, any wet areas will turn icy. Heads up for your Friday evening travels and walking as well. I want you to be careful. Now, tomorrow for our WATR food drive, good news, dry weather. That's the case all day. The food drive, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Big Y Naugatuck, looking for all of you to come out Now, as far as the temp up near 40, quiet on Sunday day, but I do want you to pay attention to Sunday night, Monday morning. Could be another Clippers system coming through with a light mix. For WATR News 8, Chief Meteorologist Gil Simmons, have a safe and good weekend.
UConn Husky football is now part of our WATR family. Tune in each Tuesday night at 6 for the UConn Football Coaches Show and every Saturday through November 24th for UConn Football. Brought to you on WATR by Industrial Management and Training Institute in Waterbury, Savings Bank of Danbury, Connecticut's local bank, DeGiorgi Roofing and Siding, family owned for over 85 years, and by The Cave, sports pub and restaurant in Waterbury. This week, check out UConn basketball and football on WATR. Thursday night, men's basketball, UConn versus Syracuse at 6:30 p.m. And Friday, UConn men versus Oregon, Iowa at 6:20. Saturday, it's UConn football at ECU. Game time starts at 5:30 p.m., which means that Jay Crawford's Music Museum will be heard Sunday night from 6 to 10 p.m. It's all for you right here at WATR 1320 and WATR.com.
This is my featured CD today, Blues, Blues, and Blues by Danny Dreher. I saw him in La Tavola the other night with local real estate broker Nick Longo. What a drummer, what a show. I'll play more of this as we go. And wow. It's DannyDreher.com. What a guitar player. Do you like music?
I love it.
And what do you do, Rob Nahigian, on your time off when you're not working that tushy to the bone?
Well, besides traveling, I have, first of all, I'm a big Civil War buff. So when I'm, like, on the road, I'll go and visit, like, battlefields or former prisons or where people lived and where they died. And one of the things I got into is pictures. There were three photographers during the Civil War that took pictures. In 1970s and 80s, a professor out of Gettysburg, Bill Fezzanito, figured out where these photographers stood, took the same pictures, and published a book. So that's what I do. I take the pictures. I try to figure out where people stood. I take the picture, and I print it and put it in the book, and you can see, like, where you stood and what it looked like 150 years before that. And, but I like traveling. I like going, you know, my wife and I have just done, like, 9 weeks of doing golfing, wine touring, you know. I do other things. I'm such as real estate. I think I'm a little multi-disciplined here.
You just don't take pictures in ports without permission.
Well, now I don't need to do that, but you can get them online sometimes.
All right, your last 1 minute, anything you want to say to the WATR audience, and I'm thrilled to have you on. Thank you today.
Yeah, just one thing to think about. There was a couple of things. I was thinking about Amazon and Zappos because my family loves to. I have all girls, Jesse, Kimmy, and my wife, Donna. Zappos shows to the front door. But here's one thing to think about. What if products aren't being brought in from Shanghai? What happens if there's a movement, a shift, where products are made in the United States, such as with 3D printing? So 3D manufacturing is you can make it right here. You design it on a computer, print it right out, boom. That would completely change my whole discussion about intermodal and logistics. I think it might even change the cost and think about the tariffs that are going on now. So just things to think about.
Well, sounds to me like we'll have you back again. Really appreciate it. And they can find you at Auburndale Realty and zip off your phone number again slowly.
617-332-6900.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
All right, Tom. Thank you for having me on.